Welcome to the Quest Express, your passport to immersive travel experiences and cozy conversations. For curious explorers who understand the art of slow travel, we're your go-to podcast. Every few weeks, we touch the heartbeat of a new city where we chat with artists, innovators, historians, and entrepreneurs who make each city come alive. The Quest Express is not just a podcast, it's your ultimate slow travel companion. It's an invitation to begin your own quest.
In part two with author Corey Mortensen, we'll head to Cuba, South America, even Antarctica, and we'll be following his footsteps all over the planet and getting on the inside of the stories that inspired his three books. I want to know what your fourth, fifth, and sixth books are about, but I've got two questions that came up. One of them I just wanted to share with you. When you had that oh shit moment about the manuscript, I heard, I don't remember the author of Mice and Men. Do you remember who wrote that?
Steinbeck.
So someone told me, and this sounds like a lore, I don't know if it's true, but someone told me that when he wrote his manuscript, he had the manuscript with like carbon copies and everything, and he went on a ferry from Brooklyn to the city, and apparently he left the manuscript on the ferry, the entire manuscript, finished manuscript, and he lost it, and he had to start all over. And I don't remember the part of the story whether he ended up retrieving the manuscript, but he believes that the second writing of it, because he started all over, was better. But so that kind of echoes what you were saying, like, you know, that it was an improvement the second time.
I will say the improvement really came with, I interviewed three editors, and I found the editor who was the exact opposite of me in every possible manner. Cat lover, you know, I mean, not that I don't love cats, but it's just like, but you know, just like everything about her was different than me. And I was like, this person's going to challenge me the most. And that's what I wanted, was somebody who's going to really challenge me, not somebody who's going to agree with me on everything. And when I thought I was done, she finally looked at me and she said, okay, now who's Corey? And I said, no, I'm done. And she's like, no, we don't know who you are. She says, this is a fine book, but we don't know who you are.
And oh, I was no. like,
I said, I don't want to tell the whole world of people who I have no idea who I, you know. And so she was the one I give props to, because if it wasn't for her, I don't think it would have popped the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Walk me through the process of deciding to write a book. I'm most curious about the like getting it out there, because you can put a book on Amazon. Was there a lot of promotion behind it, or do you attribute it to publisher or marketing? Or for someone that wants to write their first book, what recommendations would you have other than write a great book?
I don't know what to make of it, but I was surprised how well received it was. I think part of it, and in my current book I'm writing about, there's no such thing as luck, but luck is always there type of thing. But COVID helped, I think, because it being a travel book, I think there was a lot of people who were stuck in their house and they wanted to travel. So this gave them that sense of freedom. And if you look at some of the reviews, early reviews, you'll see that a lot of people say, hey, with being in COVID, there's this sense of this escape that this book gave them. So that helped. I don't remember doing much in the way of marketing. I self-published. I'm White Condor Publishing is me. So I'm self-published. I have a group that I worked with, Concierge Marketing, with Lisa Pelto. She's just been my rock in helping me get through all the Amazon connecting and the laying out everything. But as far as marketing goes, I'm just kind of like learning this stuff. And I had my own business. And to me, marketing is this black hole. You market your program, you market yourself. So you know that it's just kind of like every day something changes, something new, there's some new algorithm out there. There's something, and it just feels like it's never ending. And it's all for, you know, when you sell a book, you make $6, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to sell a lot of books, you know, to keep going and keep going. So it's, first of all, it was very helpful of the timing with COVID, the unfortunate time of COVID. But also, I think it was really strange, but it was really big in India. And I think because of the title, the Buddha and the bee.
Yes.
And
interesting.
Yeah. So I have some very interesting photos from people holding the book very sexually. Like,
I don't get it.
I don't get it either, but there, because of the, but there's like, if you go to IndiaAmazon.com or whatever their website is, there's a lot of great reviews of, because it's Buddhism and I think they thought it was spiritual. And although there's nothing to do with Buddhism in the book, there's a lot of reviews with one star that'll remind me of that. But
Oh God. Yeah. There's another tip. Get the books from Amazon, right? And then pay him back by leaving a 5-star review, please. So does Amazon print the books then?
Yeah, Amazon actually, you know, the big disruptor, thanks Jeff Bezos. It's amazing, really, quite honestly. There's no inventory of books.
Wow.
Of my books anyway. Mm-hmm. If you were to buy my book right now, they would print it, bind it, and ship it today.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, you would have it probably tomorrow. I mean, it's amazing.
That's so cool. Have you thought about, do you do any speaking? Are you on the speaking circuit?
That's my next thing. I have one of those weird, I don't know if it's a weird personality. My personality is like nothing's ever done. And until everything's done, I won't move to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And so now that the book 3 is done, I kind of feel like the series is done. And now I can go on to that speaking portion of it. So I felt like I had to get the 3rd book done before I could do that. Of course, now I use other books as an excuse, but I've written notes to myself in my book that says, Corey, you're done. Now you can do speaking on this series. So that's my next level, is to start doing speaking engagements. Yes.
And as a beginner, this is what I'm hearing anyway, you could easily, as a beginning speaker, 10 to 15K as a beginning speaker. That's where the money is in the speaking, I feel like.
I used to do presentations for my company, but I would do that to sell the product, right? I wasn't paid to do it. Yeah. So I don't have a problem speaking. It's just.
Yeah.
But thank you for that. Thank you for that motivation.
Yes. You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay. So let's move on to Unlost and Embracing Bewilderment. So Unlost was South America, right? Embracing Bewilderment was Europe and going into Asia. We already did some South America, I think, but you want to take out some morsels there?
Real quick, the Unlost was essentially left my bike in California and said goodbye to my cousin, got into the truck with the hippies and headed south. And by the time I got to Rocky Point in Mexico, I was kind of like, now what do I do? Like, I'm officially unemployed. I haven't been unemployed since I had a paper out when I was 12. So I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is for real. And so I had no idea what I was going to do. So I just kept on heading south and south and south. And, you know, as you do, you just keep meeting people and new plans arise and let's go do this and let's go parachute off that mountain and let's go do that. And I was getting bored and I got to Ecuador and I was like, I need something to do. Like, I need a goal, right?
Yeah.
And so I went on the Google and I said, I found that there was a marathon in Antarctica. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to sign up for this marathon. Yeah. Yeah. So
I love this. Let's see. Brazen isn't the word. It's just bold. Yeah, it's bold, but it's just unbridled. Like, I sometimes fantasize about going to the airport and putting all of the flights, you know, in a hat and picking out one and just like going to that city and seeing where it takes me. But I've never been brave enough to do that. But this is so fascinating that I finally met a person who would do that. We'll do anything pretty much. Is there anything you wouldn't do in terms of traveling?
Yeah, now there is. As I'm older, there's less of things I do. Life is a little bit more important. And as I'm married, it's,
yeah,
I have, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but unnecessary risks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I travel, I enjoy traveling with both of them, but I also hate traveling with them because my sister and my wife, because I sit there and I'm so concerned about their safety that I feel like I can't enjoy myself. When I'm traveling with myself, I could care less. But when I'm with them, it's just like I'm always watching out for people and making sure they're okay.
Yeah.
But I still love traveling with them. So I signed up for the marathon and I work my way down south and I have this little love interest that I meet. And this is where the 3rd book kind of comes into play.
In Antarctica?
On the way south.
Okay.
So I'm in Ecuador and I have about 3 or 4 months to get down to Ushuaia to catch the boat to go to Antarctica. along the way, I jump on a ferry through the fjords of Chile, and I meet this group of people. I meet this young lady, kind of smitten with her. We go hike tourist alpine. She goes to Carnival. I go to Antarctica. And another small story world I earlier mentioned about the gentleman that I met in Ecuador who gave us the volunteer information from the little town of New Prague, where I was born. So I'm on the ship to Antarctica with 100 people from all over the world. So I get down to Ushuaia, which is one of the southernmost points of South America. And that's where the ship to Antarctica was leaving from to go run the marathon. And on this ship is 100 people signed up for the marathon. So from all over the world, right? This is not a U.S., just sole U.S. This is all over the world. I want to be very clear. So we get on there and there's a woman that approaches me the second day out to sea. And she asks me where I was from because the rest of the group had met in Buenos Aires, whereas I met in Ushuaia. And why wasn't I with the group? And I told her I'd been backpacking around, blah, blah, blah. And she asked me where I was from. I said, Minneapolis. And I said, well, she says, I'm from Minneapolis. And I said, well, that's interesting. And in the marathon community at the time was quite small. I said, do you know a guy by the name of Mark Brunsvelt? And I only dropped his name because everybody in the running community knew Mark Brunsvelt because he pushed his daughter Amanda in a carriage because she couldn't walk. And so Mark always pushed Amanda. It's a very beautiful story. And she always beat Mark by 1 second because, you know, she was always in front.
Yeah.
And so, and she goes, well, how do you know Mark? And I said, I don't know Mark very well, but he's a very good friend of my uncle. And she goes, well, who's your uncle? And I said, Steve. And she goes, Steve Heckenleibel? I'm on a ship on the way to Antarctica with 100 people from all over the world, and this woman knows my uncle. And I'm like, how do you know my uncle? She goes, well, Mark is my brother, and I know your grandmother. And so she knows all these people from the small little town of 2,000 people, and I'm on a ship to Antarctica with people from all over the world. I'm like, oh my gosh, always behave yourself, people, no matter where you are, always behave yourself.
Yes, yes, that's a great parable. I think you have to come up with a new word for this one because that is something that happens. There's some kind of weird cosmic serendipitous thing that happens when you travel where I think that you do run into people that
absolutely
like coincidences happen. What do you attribute that to?
It's like Einstein's, you know, when you throw things in a pool and everything starts coming together. Mm-hmm. There's something there. I mean, you hear, I had a friend that I was backpacking with in Ecuador. 5 years later, it was three of us. 5 years later, she contacts me. She says, Corey, I'm sitting in a coffee shop in Santiago. And I ran into Jeff, who we met in Australia, and he was walking down the street with his wife. And I'm like, you know, you're right. There's something about that. It's, mm-hmm. it's all in the stars. It's exciting. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. I have a back to Antarctica. So what happens then? I mean, are you running on glaciers? I don't get this.
There was a glacier that you do run on. There's a lot of out and backs. You're on an island called King George's Island, and you run from all these scientific bases. So we started at the Russian research base and you go out to the Chinese research base and come back, and then you go out to the Chilean base. And so my favorite stamp, and it's an old passport now, obviously, but my favorite stamp is I have a stamp from the Russian research base in Antarctica.
Wow. And so
that's my favorite stamp in my passport.
That's pretty cool. when does your passport renew? When do you?
I just got it this year because last year, my cousin just got married in Scotland. So we had to renew it. So it's very sad. It only has one stamp in it. Yeah. It's depressing.
Gotta get to work. Yeah. Here's also something that I've noticed, especially when solo traveling, is that there always seems to be some kind of travel angel or travel helper that shows up. Has that happened to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. And I was in a hostel in Cancun. Don't judge me. And I was flying home. I'd flown to Panama Canal and just kind of making my way around. This is not related to these books by any means. And I got to Cancun, and the Swedish backpacker, she stood up a little bit into it, a couple of drinks into it. And she said, who wants to go to Cuba with me? And I said, I'll go to Cuba with you. So we went and bought tickets and we flew to Cuba. Her grandmother had just passed away, so she was upset. And I think she just needed a travel companion. So we went and traveled and then she took off. And so I was there by myself and total oversight on my part. Didn't realize that I needed money for a departure tax. Back, remember the departure tax days where I don't think they even have those anymore, but they used to have that external fee where you would have to come up with an additional $35 outside your ticket. Now I think it's all wrapped up into it.
Yeah.
I look at it as a bribe, but after she left, I met this Czech woman and we went dancing that night and I spent all my money. So I literally had no money. So I wake up, I miss my shuttle. I'm trying to get to the airport. I finally get to the airport and the lady at the counter says, I need $35 for a departure tax. Well, of course, I'm U.S. American. I can't get any money out of the debit machines because there's an embargo. So I'm stuck. I have no money. I'm thinking, okay, maybe I can go to the harbor and find some sailboats that have USA on them. And I can, you know, ask somebody, beg them to sail me back to Miami or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing in line, panhandling, asking people if they could borrow me $35, anybody. And I'm doing it in my best broken Spanish. And this Middle Eastern guy from Canada, very pleasant. He's like, hey man, here's 35 bucks. Pay me back when we land in Cancun.
Aww.
And so he gives me the money. That's my angel. This was after 9/11. This was sometime in the middle aughts. And so as we land, he immediately gets, what do they call it, profiled by the Mexican military. And so when we get off the plane, they detained him. And so I was never able to find him again because they just took him off the plane and detained him. So I was never, and I ended up sleeping at the airport because my flight home was the next morning. So that was kind of, I'll never forget him.
Do you remember his name?
It was so, the exchange was.
Yeah, because you were just going to run into him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember talking to him a little bit and his backstory was he was from Iran. He escaped Iran during the Iran-Iraq war in the 80s. And he escaped to Canada because he didn't want to fight in a war fighting his cousins. And he was an engineer. He's a really brilliant guy. And that was really that was all I got out of him. And then we, you know, got separated on the plane. And then as we were walking off the plane, he got detained.
But you know what? I kind of also have this theory about angels is that, you know, it's an angel if they disappear. Like if that was, I mean, maybe it was like a human angel on assignment or something.
Wow. I never thought of that. I love that twist.
Yes. Okay. So do you want to go on to Europe or is there more in Antarctica?
No, there's not. That's basically it. I came back from there and then that's the end of book two. Book three is Embracing Bewilderment. And essentially, I come back to the States, sell my second house. Now I'm committed. I'm done. I'm not going back. I'm not selling my soul, going to sit behind a desk. No more. I'm done. And so I sell the house and I've got this love interest waiting for me in London. So I end up going to Iceland, backpack around Iceland for a while, backpack down to from Scotland down to London. And when I go and finally meet her, turns out she's a little bit more interested in the female than she is in the male. So I was kind of like, yeah, all right, well, that's fine.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So I'm like, you know, we had a nice couple beers together and shared some stories. And as I was walking down the street, I saw a thing that says Running of the Bulls. And so I jumped on that bus and went down to Papillon and ran with the Bulls and then,
wow.
And then the Tour de France started. So I followed the tour and then ended up in East Europe. And that's where my uncle Steve contacted my grandmother. She was sick. She had cancer. So I called her and my uncle Steve got on the phone and he said, would you go to China? I'm starting a business. And then that's how I ended up in China. He goes, would you go to the factories and evaluate the furniture and make sure that the quality is okay? And I said, I got nothing going on. I'll do that.
So I made a little list here of things that I wanted to ask. And so this is just my little bullet checklist. So I wanted your favorite travel helper. I wanted your fear for your life travel story. Fortune teller stories, we can mark that off. The place, actually, since we're already on it, let's do a few of these and then we'll go to China, okay? Place you would return to 10 times.
Patagonia, South America. And I would use that as the area in general, not a specific town or area. I mean, Patagonia as a whole.
What about a couple of cities or towns that totally have your heart that when you're there, you're like, this town is made for me?
My wife and I both really connected and love Buenos Aires and Paris. So those are two ginormous towns. I love the hustle and craziness of Hong Kong. Then there's, we stayed in this little town called Punta Natales in southern Patagonia. And there's just nothing there. I mean, they run out of food like by Thursday until the ship comes in. So, I mean, like the change in what I like about both places is just super dynamic. There was just something about the simplicity of life living down there that I really enjoyed. And then there was a little town called Vilcabamba in Ecuador, and it's the Valley of the Gods. And legend has it that everybody lives to be 130 years old there. But then again, nobody knows when anybody was born, so they can say that.
So, yeah, but what is it? Vilcabamba.
Vilcabamba.
Cabamba?
Yeah. It's south of Cuenca. It's just a super, it's in the mountains, it's in the Andes, and it's just super temperate. It's where the Inca gods or the Inca kings used to go and kind of like retreat. There's like a retreat of theirs. I love the desert. So to me, just the Southwest desert in general is a place for me.
Have you been to Sedona? I'm sure you have since you're in there.
Oh yeah. It's just an hour north. Yeah.
So do you notice any, like energetically, do you notice anything different about when you go to Sedona? Because some people say it's like a vortex.
The vortexes. No, I don't.
And what about islands?
Islands, you know, I lived on an island for a while. I can handle an island. I can't live on an island again. I could never do it again.
Do you get like reverse claustrophobia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And my brother lived on an island and I visited him for a while. He lived on the island of Saipan. If you Google, like I was on an island of Wake Island, which if you Google that, it's not even an island. It's an atoll and it's as long as a runway. And it's like if a big wave comes, it's gone. It's really small. And so I love the island life. I think I need to be more productive than that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Yeah, I had this fantasy about going to different islands, but I think it's a really good place to heal and slow down. I know when I spent time in Hawaii, the people who had moved there from the mainland, they said, I have to get back to the mainland like twice a year or I'll have panic attacks or something. Okay, so what about a city that you would dock a yacht at for a month?
It would have to be someplace I haven't been, but I would imagine it would have to be, in my mind, it would be someplace in the Mediterranean. And it would be someplace I haven't been because I haven't spent any time, but there's something about that whole northern coast of the Mediterranean, the Adriatic Sea, that whole area.
Yes.
Thinking James Bond. I'm just thinking elegance and you know, this old life meets this old money meets new money, these old fishermen meets billion-dollar yachts, and you know, just this combination of cultures. And my cousin's dating a guy who does that. He delivers boats and he tells me these stories and I'm like, when am I gonna go on your ship to Gibraltar? You know, like make this happen, man.
Yes. So, oh, there's your seventh book.
Oh my goodness.
So like Dubrovnik or Split or.
Yeah, that area, all of it. I think there's so much when I think about like even further south than Dubrovnik, like just in the Greece, islands, just I've never been in that area. So, and I just look at the history of it all and it just, when I write, I go down rabbit holes and if you read my books, you'll find that one of the things I get into is ancient aliens and how did these civilizations that we're finding that were 15,000 BC, how did they do it? And now we're finding more, you know, and it's like, it's amazing. And there's civilizations upon civilizations. So the ancient ones are upon ancient ones. And it's just, yeah.
Okay. Shout out to Joe Rogan. I feel like you need to have Corey on your podcast. Just saying. He would love to talk about that stuff with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To learn more about Corey, his travels, and his books, you can go to thebuddhaandthebee.com. Enjoy, and we'll see you for part 3 very soon.